Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
Don't panic, but use advanced precautions. Be aware how close people are next to you. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And wash your face too. You end up touching your face a lot more than you think you do.
Hey, you guys, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. And this is an extra for you. I had the opportunity to sit down with Mitchell, the voice you just heard, who is a suspected confirmed case of COVID-19. And he wanted to share his experience. He is a podcaster, and that's how we ended up connecting. He shares his symptoms and experience and getting tested or not getting tested as the case might be, his child's experience of getting tested, some suggestions as you hear in the beginning, and we just have a conversation about kind of what's going on. And he's actually from Alaska, so he speaks to that perspective of being in a very different state, very different looking than the rest of our states with isolated villages and that kind of thing. I made a concerted effort, just to get this out quicker, to not edit like I normally do. Editing well is something that I enjoy doing. It's something that I take a little bit of pride in, I guess. And it's probably good practice for me, as it is something that I probably need to do a little bit less of to spend my time on other things and getting the podcast out there farther. So that being said, I just wanted to throw that out there if you feel like you hear a difference. And before we dive in, I just want to give a couple shout outs to a couple of the small businesses that are still working hard to feed people that are a few of my favorites that I haven't seen so often mentioned on Facebook, for instance, here in Duluth, Minnesota. So if you're in Duluth, India Palace downtown, they now currently have evening hours only from 5 to 9. You can order them through Food Dudes. You can also call and they will bring it to your car or you can pick it up. Their menu is online on Facebook and at their regular website too, indiapalaceduluth.com. And if you are sitting there with your phone in your hand and you are dying for some Indian, it's between 5 and 9 Monday through Saturday. You can call them at 218-727-8767. Again, that's 218-727-8767. Want to make sure you get it right. Order yourself some matar paneer, lamb kashmiri, two of my favorites. It's a great way to support your local podcaster, sending her Indian. She would be very, very happy. Two birds, one stone. Just saying. Just saying. Anyway, we have to keep our local Indian restaurant alive. It's the last one we have. And for some of us, Indian food is a comfort food. Okay, next one I want to mention is the King of Creams, which is down on 4th Street, 5th Avenue. And if you haven't been there, they make fantastic hamburgers. We don't have our Duluth Grill right now to give us a delicious hamburger. These guys do a really fantastic job. They also have gluten-free options. Just saying, for those of you, they have good gluten-free buns if that's something you need. They also work through Grubhub and you can order online. They have a really nice online ordering system and you can do curbside or run in and pick it up. And their phone number is 218-725-9000. Again, 218-725-9000. Your local podcaster would not turn that down either. And they have delicious ice cream. So that whole King of Creams thing. If you have maybe a restaurant or a business that you think is kind of getting forgotten, feel free to shoot me a message via Facebook, post it on the notes, post it on the podcast page where you can put a comment, send me an email at judy@wellnessren.com. I would be happy to post that out. If it's your business, feel free to send me a message. I'm happy to do a few mentions. So without further ado, I introduce you to Mitchell.
Let's just dive in and do it.
Okay. Thank you, Mitchell, for being here. We are going to have a chat about a very interesting / unfortunate experience that you're having right now. So you were diagnosed as a non-confirmed case of COVID-19?
Yes, I was. that my official diagnosis was suspected confirmed.
Suspected confirmed. Okay, got it. All right. And so, and just to give the picture here, you're in Alaska. And you have been dealing with this for a while, and now your son has been tested, but you haven't got the results of that yet, back yet?
Yes, hopefully today we will get the results, and I'm really curious about it because he was only down for about 2 days. Now today he's more back to a regular self.
Okay.
Where for like when me and my wife went down, we were down for a full week before we could even think about moving.
Okay. So your wife also is suspected.
Yeah.
Which doesn't surprise me, but
we can self-quarantine, but we did not go to the extreme of locking ourselves in separate rooms.
Gotcha, like, right. You know, well,
one of us gets it, the other one's going down with us.
So talk about this, because you sound like, you know, you're definitely obviously coughing, but you're kind of doing kind of okay at this point.
Yeah, so the whole thing started out about, I got diagnosed last Tuesday, so probably about that Sunday, I noticed I was kind of having a harder time breathing. I wasn't real phlegmy. My chest was just kind of tight, but I'm a pretty hefty guy, and I've been working in retail, so I've been working mad overtime with the shop apocalypse upon us, and I've been helping out a lot in the online department, so I'm running all around that store, and I didn't think too much of it. I mean, I'm only 33, pretty healthy person overall. So I didn't think too much of it. Come Monday, I started getting the sore, scratchy throat. My lungs were starting to kind of feel like they're a little bit on fire. Still wasn't too worried about it. We hadn't had any confirmed cases up here. No, we had one up here in Alaska. But it was with a cargo pilot that was diagnosed in the air and landed and went straight to medical or something. But it wasn't the top of my worry list at the time. Then Tuesday morning I woke up and I felt like somebody just beat me with a shovel. My whole body hurt. I couldn't breathe for anything. Even just getting up to walk to the bathroom was exhausting. And my wife told me, she's like, man, it sounds like you're drowning when you're just laying here breathing. So that's when we decided, hey, it was time to go into the doctors. So we called the medical hotline and did everything you're supposed to do. And they told me to come in. So I went into our local ER and they tested me for pneumonia, did the chest x-rays and stuff. And the doctor straight told me that they can't test me at the time because they only had about 70 tests in the state of Alaska. And I was not in a high risk category. So that's when they said I'm suspected confirmed. And they were 95% sure if they did a test, it would come back positive. So they told me just to go home, gave me an inhaler to use, go home and completely lock down.
Okay. And did you then at that point, you didn't lock yourself away from your kid? You just were all together?
We kept distance from the kid.
Okay.
Like, but we didn't like completely, I didn't completely like lock him out completely, but we kept like, I wouldn't let him give me a hug or a kiss or anything. We kept our distance from each other, but we live in a pretty small place as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been limited success anyways.
Mm-hmm. It gets tricky if you have small housing with this. I mean, I don't, you know, because I know I was listening to the, you know, them saying, look, if you have it, quarantine yourself into your own room and stay there. And it's like, well, I don't have any doors that close in my house behind, you know, I live in a small apartment. So if there's another person here, this would be really, really tricky. and thinking about people in New York and hearing some of the people talk about their tiny little apartments in Poland and things like that, or they're like, well, if we're here, we're kind of, you know, we'll do the best we can, but we're kind of stuck. So.
And that was kind of the attitude we took. Like I said, we took as many precautions as we could to keep distance, with the kid, me and my wife, like, obviously, we try to keep our distance from each other as much as we could to be a little precautious, but when you're in a small place, let's face it, most of us don't have a 4 or 5 bedroom house, mm-hmm. that 2-3 bathrooms that we can lock ourselves away from.
And exactly. Yeah.
You just got to kind of, you got to roll with the cards you got and try to deal with it the best you can.
Right. And so that was, so when did you go on? You said a Tuesday. So it was that last Tuesday or the Tuesday before?
Tuesday before. This last Tuesday, I hit my 1 week.
Okay. Got it. Oh, that's right. Okay. So are you feeling like better now?
Yeah. No. The last probably 48 hours, 72 hours. Let me roll back a little bit before that. When I was in the full fledged, I had a fever and my breathing just sucked horribly for about 5 to 6 days. I felt like I had the flu on steroids, just without the throwing up. I never got the nauseous part. Mm. It was all in the lungs, upper respiratory. And then once the fever broke, I started feeling better. And now, like today, I'm feeling really good. It's just I still can't do much without getting winded. It's like kind of a slow, I feel like I'm having to build up my lungs again to be able to do stuff without getting winded. Even when I start doing a lot of the podcasting stuff, sometimes I'll feel like I just ran a marathon.
Uh-huh.
And I'm fat. I don't run marathons.
So did they give you anything like for your lungs? I mean, I watched a video of a gentleman yesterday who talked about the fact that he was, and this video was done with him at the hospital. And he was basically saying, you know, my lungs felt like they had glass in them. And he said, you know, they're getting me up to move. And he said, it's horrific. And the first time they got me up to move, I ended up throwing up and it took me like 20 minutes to get up and it's horrible. But they say, well, if you don't do this stuff, your lungs will, you know, you'll die, basically, is the way he put it. You have to do this to get this to clear out, and your body has to do the work to gain the strength again. Did they give you anything to do or think about, you know, or lung, like breathing kind of exercises, I guess, to do to help yourself through this in any way?
You know, they really didn't. They gave me an inhaler with the extender on it to be able to make sure I could get all the medicine from the inhaler down.
Okay.
But besides that, I mean, our hospital, we're a pretty small town, small area in Alaska, and they were already starting to get overwhelmed when I went in. And I think they probably are just trying to cope the best they can there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think a full workup at that time had been ready. I'm sure, like when my son went in, they gave him the whole breathing treatment machine to take home.
Okay. Talk about your son's experience. Talk about this experience. Walk through what it looked like to bring him in and what they did with the test and go from there.
So when he started Tuesday, maybe it was Tuesday, last Tuesday, or we're on Thursday now. So maybe last Tuesday, I think it was, he started just sounding horrible. He was hacking a cough. And you could hear him wheezing and everything, and he was just acting real lethargic. So the wife called the ER. They told us they have one set up for children here, and they told us to bring him down there. Excuse me. To bring him down there, and when she got there, they met her out at the car, and they actually, the nurse was in full PPE, hazard gear. And they did the swab up his nose all the way to the back of the throat brain area. I'm not exactly sure where, but all the way back there. And then they actually had a tablet with the plastic casing and stuff on it that they gave to my wife to talk to the doctor with.
Okay, so she like
did not even actually come out.
It was like just FaceTime?
Yeah, it was basically a FaceTime consultation with the doctor.
Okay.
And then like as soon as my wife gave him back the tablet, they like took it all apart and disinfected it, all that good stuff. But it was pretty much just the nurses were out there doing the test, and then the doctors were FaceTimed.
So this is all happening in your car, and I'm just trying to get a picture of this. So they come out to your car with all their stuff, and then they just like, how did, like, I'm just curious for my own personal self, because this test sounds horrible to me. How did he take that? Like, is it really uncomfortable? I mean, to me, it sounds horrible.
Yeah. He was not digging it at all. It's kind of like when they do the flu test, but they go further back.
Oh, so I've never actually had the flu test either.
So it's like kind of a long cotton swab that they go up through the nasal passage to the back of your throat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He took it like a champ, though. I'll give him credit. He's only in kindergarten, and he was just feeling so miserable at that time. He just did not care.
Wow, that poor kid.
But he's doing better today, though. I can report he's doing better today. That's why I'm going to be really interested to see what his results come back as. And that's been my biggest problem in this is, you know, did I actually have COVID-19? Was it a flu? Without getting tested, there's no that uncertainty that it creates, because it's like, well, do I have the antibodies to it already? Or when I go back to work, am I just opening myself up for more exposure?
Well, right. So, okay. So you're quarantined for 14 days. And then if your son has it, you start that 14 days over again.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. I know this is not a fun thing for you. You're a very extroverted person, you told me. And so this is not a good time. But from things that we have learned, it sounds like they don't even really know, like the 14 days you could get, could you get reinfected? Could you, all of that stuff. Kind of up in the air.
So yeah, it was really interesting. I did a podcast with a doctor and nurse team. I brought them onto my podcast and was talking to them, and the doctor straight kind of, when I started asking a lot of questions about that, she's like, to be honest, we really don't 100% know yet. And she said it's gonna take about 18 months to really get that hard data, if you could be reinfected, if it's going to start mutating and come back seasonally. The doctors really at this point are still guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that really wild? So it's kind of like, here's a crapshoot, but it's the best crapshoot we have for you.
Yeah, pretty much. And it was really, if you don't mind, I'll kind of expand on what she said a little bit. That was,
yeah, go for it.
Really one thing that caught my attention. So she was telling me, if you go into the ER or the doctors, wherever, if you are not a high-risk category, when they do the swab, they'll actually, if you're a young child, they'll test for RSV and the flu first. And if you're an adult, they'll test for the flu first. If you come back positive for the flu, they don't even continue to test for corona. Because you can be dual infected with the flu and corona at the same time, but from the medical standpoint, unless you need intensive care, it's the same treatment for the flu as for corona. It's more of a support. So the numbers they're giving us aren't even nowhere near close to accurate, because if you test for the flu, then they stop testing right there.
Right. So... Yeah, so it's interesting, because I just want to come back to one of the things you said, is that you can have the flu and you can have corona at the same time. Like, yes, all of these things can live in our bodies at one time. And then, yeah. And then, so if you have it, then so the numbers that we have, they don't even, obviously, like you said, they don't continue testing because they don't have enough tests to begin with. So, all right, you've got the flu. We don't know what else you have. You've got something. So go home and take care of yourself. Same protocol.
Yeah. And to me, that really caught me off guard, because I was like, you know, you listen to the media and it don't matter what source of the media, you hear anything on corona and it's how bad this is, these numbers and stuff, but they're kind of just BS numbers. And that's coming from an actual doctor in the field, mm-hmm, saying they're kind of just BS numbers, because they really can't test RV living adult for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was saying some people will have it and never show symptoms at all.
Right. Yes.
Spread it.
Yeah. And I'll be curious to figure out if we discover that those people who have it and don't show symptoms do at some point. Like, do they never show symptoms? Does it somehow manifest weird? You know, what's going on there?
Yeah, see, like, my wife, because they told her she was suspected confirmed from being next to me, but she had it a lot more in her, she had it a lot more in her gut. She had some breathing problems, but it wreaked havoc with her digestive system, where me, I could eat, like, a fat man in a candy store and be fine. I just can't breathe. So it's kind of interesting to see how it's hitting different people.
Right.
On different levels.
Right. Well, and that's kind of one of the things that they're, you know, saying, or at least I guess I feel like when I think of all of the things that I have read, you know, we've heard the whole, you know, if you're young and you're healthy, you're probably okay. And then we, you know, then doctors, I know I read stuff from Italy where the doctors are saying, you know, but we do, yes, this is bad for people who have compromised immune systems and older people, but you're not out of the woods if you're young. We have people in the hospital that are in their 20s, 30s, 40s. And I saw a statistic yesterday that said like 51% of people are between 50 or 15 and I don't remember if it's 50 or late 40s. And that it, you know, and one of the things that I read by one of the doctors, he said, look, this is tearing up people's lungs. Like, this is something you might have to live with for the rest of your life if you catch it and you're young, you know? So it's kind of, it's like all of those pieces are really, you know, kind of interesting. And it's understandable why it's scary, you know, because you don't know. We just don't know enough to know, you know? And I'm, you know, if I have to have it, they say what 80% of Americans will probably have it. It's like, I'd like to have it when things are more known and there's more care available.
And hopefully, I mean, I will say I'm glad that I came down with my symptoms. I'm assuming I had it. I'm trying to trust my doctors as much as I can. But before, I mean, the complete onrush that is very easily is going to overwhelm our hospital system.
Yeah,
that's the scary part, is when it does hit full force. I have friends, I grew up in the Seattle area. I got friends down there that are saying just the hospitals are on the verge of being overwhelmed. And, wow. And it's crazy. I mean, we're a first world country. You don't think of, I mean, you go to the ER, you see people there. Oh, I stubbed my toe. I need to see the doctor. You don't think about our systems getting overwhelmed like you would South America, Africa, Asia, some of these third world countries. I mean, look at even Europe. We have family that's from Europe, and some of their systems are just completely crashing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait, this is a first world country. Like, you don't think in 2020 you have to worry about, can the hospital even see you? Do they have the capacity to?
Right. Well, it's that difference of when you have the average amount of people getting sick versus all of a sudden everybody getting sick. You know, it's a high, you know, if you take the average and you double it, that's overwhelming, right? I mean, there's only so many beds and you can't just like magically, we're not, you know, hospitals are not empty on a good day. So,
yeah.
So but you're right. It is sort of that I think sometimes it's that unimaginableness of it'll all just be okay, because it's kind of always okay, but not really looking at the reality of, no, it's really probably not grandly okay. It's we're all functioning. And this is testing all of the limits of functioning. Too many people at one time. Yeah. What are you going to do? There's only so many beds. You know, I was on a conference, call type thing with the, interestingly enough, the health department of Hawaii yesterday. I took advantage of a call that they had, and they're like really being proactive and they don't have as many cases there as we do here in Minnesota, but they're basically just saying, we just need to stop this because we can't handle it. And so here's what we're going to do. You know, we don't have any tourism right now. Most of our stuff is based on tourism. So everybody just stay home, do what you got to do. And I was just really impressed with how they were thinking about it. But they, you know, they're talking about, this is how many beds we have, and we're trying to make more in, you know, but if those are filled up, they're filled up. There's nothing you can do. And how do you, you know, it's a decision nobody wants to make. Nobody wants to turn somebody away for healthcare and say, well, I'm sorry, we're full, you know, but that's the reality that we're facing. And that's what all of this is all about. That's what all of this is trying to not happen, so that people can get care that they need when and if they need it. And if we can make it so that nobody needs it, then yay, we won. you know, kind of, sort of. So, or succeeded perhaps. But yeah, it is a crazy thing to think about. And you in Alaska, you know, you guys have, like, talk about that a little bit, because you're in a whole different world.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to. So Alaska, we have, right now, I would say we have a pretty controversial governor, made a lot of controversial choices up here. Either you love him or hate him. But I will say I've never been a big fan of his, but I have been impressed on his ability to step up. We have, a lot of people might not know this, we have what they call the Interior Villages. It is the Alaskan Natives, Eskimos, are up north. They're along the coast, but the villages out here that are a very vulnerable population. A lot of them are severely elder, have health problems, and the only way into a lot of these villages is to fly or boat in. And they do have large families that go up and visit, and they have pretty much cut off all interstate airfare to the villages. Even up on our North Slope, where all of our oil is right now, you cannot fly up to the town of Dead Horse because of the state trying to limit the spread of this to the villages, because that's, for as Alaskans, that's where it's scary for us, is what if something like this gets out to those villages? They can't fly 300 people out at a time,
mm-hmm.
and to get them to healthcare. And then we're seeing the economic impact of it in Southeast Alaska. People might know the name Sitka, Juneau, towns down there that I spent a year down there. 90% of their economy relies on tourists.
Right.
And they've canceled all cruise ships for at least 60 days. So it's having its impact here.
Right. No doubt.
It's starting to spread. There's been a couple cases down in Ketchikan, which is a real small island. Juneau is a decent-sized town. We call it a city, but anywhere else would call it a town. And then, like, Sitka, where I lived, there's only 14 miles of road. So we're on the second-largest island, I believe. It might be in the world, actually. Sitka Island's huge. Admiral Island, I believe it's called. But the town of Sitka is very isolated. You can only fly your boat in there. And it's only on 14 miles of road.
And oh, wow.
The whole population lives in a small, dense area. And they're trying to be very proactive to keep this out of Sitka. Because once it gets there, there's going to be, you're not going to stop the spread of it.
Well, yeah, it is, and it's an interesting thing to think about, because you can think about it in the, well, then just don't have people come up there. That can't be difficult. But it's is it already there? And if it is there, and once if you're an asymptomatic person bringing it, you do a few things and you touch a few things that spreads it. It gets to everybody before it can get stopped. And yeah, like you say, you can't get people out of there if there's no hospitals in these villages, I assume, right? So
yeah, most of them, I mean, some like Sitka, Juneau will have a hospital, but when you get up here to the mainland, the interior, there's no hospitals. They mm-hmm. they don't, a lot of these villages don't even have police presence. They have what they call a BPO, which is pretty much the guy we pick to report everything when the troopers come through on their rounds.
Wow. That's such a different world.
So, and one thing about, you were saying, and I've heard a lot of people make the argument that don't know up here, just don't have people come up. For the South Alaska, 80, I believe something like 80-something percent of our food is imported.
Sure.
And especially you get Southeast Alaska, everything has to come up from the barge. So there's, we can't cut off all traffic to us. Right. As I've been told, a lot of our food actually comes from the Seattle and the Portland ports is where food starts out and comes up. So there's stuff that is out of our control.
Yeah. Wow. Think about, I mean, all of these complicated systems that work together, you know, that we just take for granted, that things just, we have the technology, we just do. And now we have to question, like, everything. Like, how does this you know, how does this work, right? Like, I think of, I mean, you've got, the issue of getting food and having people isolated. And if you get a bunch of people sick, how do you get them out? And if you were to all just get a big plane, and I'm sure there are places you can't even, there's no room for a big plane to land or whatever. But if you did, then you put all those people on the plane, and then anybody that isn't affected is probably going to be infected. And it's just, yeah, it's just kind of crazy. Just all of those things we don't think about. And there's common sense, but this isn't a common sense thing for us because it's all very new. If we're going to all act like we're in a clean room,
how do Well, see that, and you know, if for some people that aren't taking it too serious, like I told them, you go into the grocery store, you get your little hand wipe and you wipe the handle down, but how many times, it just take a counter with you and count how many times you end up touching different parts of that cart. Like, oh, if you're putting stuff in, you're leaning over it when you're unloading that grocery car, you touch a lot more stuff than you actually might consciously be aware that you do. And you don't know how many people touch that box of macaroni and cheese before you.
Yeah. To sort of make the decision to whatever you touch, you take home.
It's
a really tough time when you need to read labels right now. Wow. Well, yeah, this is so for those of us, the rest of the world, just from your perspective of dealing with this, do you have any like thoughts or, you know, anything that you just kind of want to share or that you've experienced that has been helpful for you through all of this?
A big thing is don't panic. We that's the problem we're having with our grocery stores right now. Everybody's in panic mode. But for a majority, like for me, it sucks. Like, I'm not going to downplay it. It sucked having it. But it was not life-threatening, thank God, for me. For a majority of people, it's not going to be life-threatening. Don't panic, but use advanced precautions. Be aware how close people are next to you. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And wash your face too. Every time I'm getting in the habit now, every time I wash my hands, I wash my face just because you end up touching your face a lot more than you think you do. So, and you know, check in on your neighbors and your community. Everybody is suffering through this. I don't know where Minnesota's at on its lockdown, but here 99% of the restaurant employees are out of work. Most restaurants that are open have one or two cooks and one or two servers right now. So just check on your community, you know, send a text message and make sure everybody's doing fine. If you can help them somehow, help them. And if not, you know, at least let them know you care, because if you're extroverted like me, it sucks being in lockdown. We need outside contact.
There was a great meme on Facebook that said something like, for all of you introverted people who are doing fine, check on your extroverted friends. They're not okay.
Yes, that is me. Like, the first few days it was okay. And, you know, one thing I would like to put out there is, I run a podcast all about small businesses that are suffering right now. But, you know, try to support all businesses. I know this sounds hypocritical, but not just the small businesses. If you go to Chili's once a week or Applebee's, anywhere like that, yeah, it's a big corporate chain, but the workers are not. They're the everyday people. They need that coming in just as much. So buy that gift card to a small business and maybe even a larger business in your area. Like, we got to just come together and work through this, put political stuff, put rich versus poor aside, just help each other as a community.
And talk about, with you having the virus, talk about like what you tell the people when you have them deliver your food.
Yeah, so we've had DoorDash a couple times, and we just tell them that we are suspected confirmed, we're under quarantine, and to just put the food down, like just put it in front of our door, tap on the door, and then just go in your car and leave. You don't have to wait for us to open the door. We know you're there. Trust me, fat guy smells the food as you're coming out of the car. I know you're there. But it's just that precaution. Like, we ordered pizza last night. And the driver, she really didn't know what to do. So she took all the food and put it on top of the bag, put the bag on the door, on the ground, knocked on the door, and then walked back like 10 feet until I came and collected the food. And then she came and got her hot bag. So, but yeah, we just let them know, like, hey, in even places that normally don't always let you tip with a credit card, over the phone, a lot of them will right now.
Okay.
And you just tell them, hey, you know, I'm under quarantine. Whatever's going to be most comfortable for your delivery driver. And don't degrade people if they're freaked out. Because let's face it, most delivery drivers are younger kids, maybe college kids that's never experienced something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it might freak them out a little bit. You know, talk through the door with them. Be like, hey, just put food down, bro. Go about your business. It's all good. I'll get it from here.
Right. Well, yeah, to, you know, once you kind of take all this in a little bit, it's like, how freaked out do I need to be? Or just, it is that kind of thing where you're trying to think through every move, you know, what are you touching? What are you doing? What should I be doing? I mean, I think that we have these kind of rules in place, which I think are very, very helpful. The 6-foot rule, those things are very, very helpful. But it is also when you have that awareness of, like you say, when you think about your grocery cart and how much you touch or how much you touch in the store, that there's just a lot more to think about. There's a video that I posted on my Facebook page by a doctor who walks through the process of bringing his groceries and his food home. And it is something that you are really trying to figure out, okay, how do I do this with touching the least things or having the least things touch my stuff, you know, and it is kind of a tricky thing.
It's funny because, like, one thing we didn't really think about, like when they told us we were going to go on quarantine, we went online and placed an order to have somebody else pick it up for us from our local grocery store. They have the online ordering.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize how harder it is to shop for groceries when you're not seeing stuff.
Yes.
It was so frustrating. We had like 10, 15 bags of groceries. We're like, all right, we're good. Let's have, I don't know, we'll say tacos for dinner tonight. Then you realize you don't have lettuce. And you're like, son of a monkey's uncle. There's like so many little things you don't think about when you have to order them online because you're used to just grabbing it when you're walking through the store.
Right. Well, right. You've got those visual cues, right? You're like, tacos, and there's lettuce. I should get lettuce.
Yeah. It's been that's been kind of a frustratingly fun experience is trying to shop online for groceries.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It makes sitting down to think about your meal planning much more of a concerted effort.
And oh my God, it's so hard not to just graze when you are locked down all the time. Like, we'll buy some snacks. Like, yeah, this will last us a week. Like 25 minutes later, we're like, so that was a short week.
Yeah, you have to hide stuff on yourself.
We'll see. And one thing too is like me and my wife were talking about people that are on the lower income side with food stamps and stuff,
mm-hmm.
especially families that have multiple kids, maybe two, three kids that are in school, they're not used to shopping to feed three meals a day for 2 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of them, some do breakfast. Most working families don't do a lunch because you have that at school.
Mm-hmm.
And then dinner to where when you're locked down all the time, all suddenly now it's like extended summer vacation.
Yeah.
That you weren't prepared for.
Right.
On that side of things. So it's been interesting to kind of look at our experience and then try to look at it from the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Do you notice, cause you work in a grocery store, right?
Yeah.
Do you notice that the food that's being purchased, like it's hard right now because people are, you still panic buying, but do you notice that things are different? Like, I heard somebody talk about the fact that they were like, meat is all gone. Well, it's because people are cooking at home, you know?
Yeah. You know, when we were just hitting the panic buying when I went into quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
So it, and our shelves were, I mean, literally emptied as quick as we could fill them. So I didn't really get a chance to see that part of it too much. I'll be curious to see when I go back to work next week, what it looks like 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
But now where you were saying you're the cooking thing, I seen the funniest meme they had on my Facebook the other night. It said, I finally figured out why the TP hoarding, because people are having to eat their own cooking for the first time in years.
Oh, that's so sad.
And coming from the kitchen, I just, that one made me laugh and almost die from choking to death from laughing.
Oh, yeah, because you are a chef as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So. Oh goodness.
I will be curious to see the long term effects of the shutdown to see if it, you know, let's face it, for the last 10 years or so, family meals have not been the norm. Everybody sitting down at the table having family dinners together.
Yep.
Our lives are so busy that it really has not been the normal thing. So it'll be curious to see the long-term effects.
Right.
On if that starts becoming more routine. Like me and my wife, we're hoping we can do that more with our son.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, who knows what will be happening 3 weeks from now, a month, a year.
Right.
But we kind of didn't realize how much we don't really necessarily always sit down and eat together until this.
I think it's a very interesting time for, like you say, for people with families. There's a lot of shift in, you know, communication opportunities and together opportunities, and just it's, I'm sure if my mother was still alive, she would be like, yeah, this was called my life for my, you know, home. It's what you do. You didn't go out very often, you know, and learning to sort of be together. And it's and I know I've seen some people that I know post really awesome pictures of, you know, family kind of hanging out together and playing games, or, you know, reading books and just doing and being. And we'll see how we all are when all this is over with each other, but it certainly lends an opportunity to do things a little differently than we have done them, you know, for sure, just out of nature of being forced.
And it's been really cute, because like my son, this was his first year of school, kindergarten, and all, you know, they went on spring break, and then that's when Alaska locked down, shut all the schools down. So, and the kids, they don't quite understand it. They're like, what, you're sick, so I can't go to school? But his teacher is like gone way above and beyond, out of her way. And a lot of the kids now, the parents are posting daily videos. His teacher has a whole Facebook group that's for his class. So they're even starting to post videos now. Like, the parents are posting videos of kids saying hi to each other and doing yoga and the different things they would normally be doing in school. And it's just been kind of cool to see how well the teachers are adapting to it to give the kids some type of normalcy.
Right. Still invested in the kids learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's what they were worried about, is like, you know, next, will he think school's always this short? And
right.
If you get a cold, you just don't have to go back? to him, he don't know the difference between a cold and coronavirus.
Sure.
He just knows he's sick.
Right.
So.
Yeah. How many kids does he have in his class?
20 range, I believe.
Okay, so it's a decent sized class.
Yeah.
And they normally do yoga? Like that, yeah. You said that. Dude, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, they do yoga, and like the school gave out laptops to everyone to the kids that needed him to be able to do stuff at home. Mm-hmm. And his teacher, she's such a sweetheart. She records some videos of her reading books for the kids and make sure that she comments on all their little art projects they've been posting.
Oh, wow, that's just delightful. That's so good.
Yeah, so hopefully it keeps a good positive image of school in his head while he's so young. I know myself, I'd have been like, peace, you know what? Y'all should get this every year. We start school in September, so we should start this by October, and I'll be good.
But you know, finish up what you're saying.
I was going to say, for him, you know, now that I'm the parent and not the jackass kid, I want to make sure it's an enjoyable experience for him.
Right. Well, right. And I think it's a cool thing to see teachers show that it isn't just I'm off work now. I don't have to do this anymore. It is about the mission of being the teacher. That's ingrained in them. They're showing the kids, look at what work ethic looks like. Look at what we have to do to sometimes adapt to these funky situations. And how do we do that? So it's really teaching them a can-do attitude, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree because, you know, even if you look at the last few years, we've had what? SARS, MERS, or whatever they call it. Ebola popping up again. Coronavirus. I won't go into this another one that's supposedly popping up in China because I didn't read the full article. But I think things go forward from here, we're going to be getting more and more viruses and, you know, God forbid, even diseases that are new popping up more frequently due to the population and everything else. I won't dive down that rabbit hole, but I think long term, something like this might become more of a new norm than the freak coincidence. Right.
Well, and I don't understand all of the details enough to know. Like, I think I've heard people say that this isn't a mutation of something else. So, you know, when I think about the fact that one of the things they talk about is, you know, everybody is so clean that we end up having super bugs kind of thing. So is this in any way related to that? I don't know. I haven't heard that. It's my curiousness. Just as we learn how this is affecting and then what else is behind it. Like you said, is this going to be kind of a new weird norm, which is so sad and unfortunate of just when you think of the connection, the physical connections that humans need and that we don't get enough of already. And now we're being told stay away, you know, from each other. So it's going to be interesting to see what will our lives look like in 5 years, not even to mention 6 months. Will this be sort of like a thing of the past? That was a bump in the road, move on? Or will this be, we have a totally new normal now?
Yeah, well, see, so coming, I was just thinking about this as we were talking. So they say they believe it came from bats or the fish markets in China. But so in the last 10 years, the trend I've seen in the kitchen is using more and more exotic ingredients. Not saying these two things are completely connected, Not going down the conspiracy path, but I would be curious to see the rise of new viruses to the rise of using all these exotic ingredients, stuff that our grandparents would have never cooked with.
Well, it's moving around the world, right? Like you're taking one thing from point A to point B, and we don't understand how everything works yet, so we don't necessarily know what we might be doing.
I'll be curious to see it on from that side as a chef, because I mean there's ingredients that we get from Southeast Asia that probably people have never used 20 years ago.
Right.
So be curious to see the long term.
Yeah. It will be very curious. I agree. I don't think we know what we're up for, and that's okay. I don't think we can, and I think we need to just be open to that. That makes it kind of scary, but we just have to see what happens and what do we do and how do we work the best with whatever we have. So it's pretty exciting to see how people are adapting. And oh my gosh, you know, what technology has allowed us to do, right? I mean, you know, if we didn't have
that double-edged sword, though, like it's really that double-edged sword, because I think that's it, for all the benefit it gives us, it also gives the uneducated a voice. To a very large voice. To put out, like, I've seen people putting out, oh, this is literally the common cold, it's a coronavirus. No, it's a corona family. Completely different.
Right.
Virus mutation of it, yeah, it has the same base, but it's completely different. So it does have a lot of wonderful benefits, but at the same time, it's that double-edged sword. Would the world and the markets and everything be in such a panic without social media and the news being available at everybody's fingertips?
Yeah, it is a very curious thing. I mean, first of all, this probably wouldn't have spread so quickly if we didn't have the access to everything on the planet and the people all over the world that we can just get from here to there in a day, you know. But yeah, but then the information runaway is also pretty crazy too. It's also, yeah, definitely a double-edged sword. It's also fantastic because you can do some research and try to get down to the bottom of things when you hear something askew, but also the askew easily runs. And sadly, that's, you know, that's what media is about. It's about catching your eye. Try to reading past the headlines to just try to dig down. Okay, what's actually going on here?
They say in advertising, sex sells. For the media, it's danger sells.
Yes.
Fear sells.
Yeah, totally true. I totally agree. Yeah. Did you go to the podcast conference in LA?
No.
Okay.
I'm going to cry now.
Sorry. There was a woman there who is somebody who has had her own TV show. She's very successful. And, you know, in media and that kind of thing. And she said, you know, she says, for me to sell articles, really, you pretty much have to make people feel like whatever you're saying, they're going to die if they don't know this information. And so that was her recommendation. That's how you write a headline, right? And she wasn't doing it out of being, she was just simply stating a fact, you know? And I'm like, listening to this going, oh, this is so what's wrong with the world.
Oh, think about it, even from our perspective as a podcaster,
mm-hmm.
what we consider, like me and your shows, probably what we consider a large audience, a true crime show would consider that a small audience because
they wouldn't waste their time.
Yeah, because, I mean, true crime, that's the big boom of podcasting is true crime, because you're hearing something evil and scary. And it kind of gets you riled up and gets you kind of in that flight or flight mode compared to where, like, my small businesses, unless you're here in the local community or looking for them, the average day Joe in New York probably could give a rat's ass less about them.
Right. Well, I think about that with my own podcast too, because I'm like, this health and wellness stuff, it's if you're kind of doing it right, it's not really sexy, you know?
Yeah.
and I'm not trying to instill everybody in, you know, with every practitioner I bring on, you know, if you don't see this person, you're going to die, you know? I feel like it's that, can I even compete? Can I even compete with what's out there? Because I'm trying to share information that's real and not inflammatory. I sometimes feel more intense about something than I even share, because I feel something is so important or whatever, and maybe I should let that fly a little bit more. But it's not, and I'm not trying to necessarily hold back either. It's just I'm trying to be real. So it's that feeling of I don't want to create headlines that are over the top. You know, I want to be catchy and catch people's eye, but I want to be truthful and honest. And it feels like, is it even?
It's an uphill battle.
Yeah, it is. It's like, well, does anybody really want to hear information that's real and factual anymore? Does, you know, so it and I know that they do. I mean, I know that they do. I have, you know, I have the listenership for my show that I have, but I'm never going to have the true crime people, most likely. In order to get that, I would have to be so much different than I am. And it's so hard, because you sometimes wonder, yeah, is it what you know, is it worth it? But I want to serve the people who are interested and who are excited and want to learn and want to take care of themselves. And how do you do this? And how do you do it authentically without being part of the noise? I mean, that's why my podcasts are longer. I don't want to be a sound bite.
Yeah. And see, that's what was so funny, because I know we're part of a lot of the same groups on Facebook with mm-hmm. the podcasting, and you see the people with their large numbers, and then you filter out half of them as garbage anyways. And mm-hmm. then you notice it's a lot of true crime or end of the world kind of stuff mm-hmm. that are the people that are actually posting these large numbers. And you're like, you know what? Why? But then you turn on your TV. What do we got? A lot of crime shows, a lot of war movies.
Right.
Stuff like that. And you're like, oh, you know what? That makes sense. Like, bad stuff sells. People don't care about happy-go-lucky. I mean, they do, but it's not as thrilling for the everyday armchair Joe guy.
Right, right. No, that's true. Yeah,
I even posted an episode on my podcast about talking about my experience while I was pretty much in the midst of having this. And I mean, I got my hardcore listeners that are going to listen to anything I post.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not. My listeners for my show, they're so used to it being on the business side that it just did not resonate with them. The numbers for it are a lot lower than I really expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a few people about it, and they're just like, well, that's not what we tune into your show for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a eye opener to see, you know, maybe not everybody wants to hear about this stuff. 'Cause like, I'm sure your show, your health and wellness, this is right in your wheelhouse. So it's a good fit to where my show, I tried coming outside the box a little bit, and my listeners were just like, no, we have other podcasts for that.
Right. And it's interesting too, because I think it depends on how you listen to podcasts, because I think that's something that I would probably listen to from most of the people that I listen to, because it's their experience and I typically care about them, right? The person who's hosting. And with this going on, it is kind of, it's like, this is a real person's experience and this is somebody I have connection to. So I'm kind of interested, but I think, yeah, you're right. I think people listen for different reasons, and that's the tricky part. Yeah.
Can't please everybody.
No, I know. Right. And you want to. So tell us about your podcast. Before we go, tell us about your podcast. So if somebody wants to just learn more about what you're doing, and I know the 49th meal, that's very Alaska focused. Talk about what that is.
Yeah. So I have the 49th meal. I started around November, and coming from the kitchen industry, I got really curious about where the food we use in the kitchen comes from. So I started reaching out to a few small businesses I knew that made stuff, sold it at like the Sunday markets and stuff, and kind of really got fascinated. And it's all about Alaskan made food and beverages. I don't really do restaurants too much, because that's kind of cooking it and stuff. This is the stuff, like I have a couple chocolate makers, and they actually import the beans up to Alaska and roast the chocolate and make the bars, everything themselves. I got a couple wineries that grow their own grapes up here, and not so much grapes, but they grow their own fruit to make their own wines out of.
Okay.
So it's a coffee roaster, stuff like that. It's just kind of small businesses that as a chef, it caught my interest. And I love the entrepreneur community. Mm-hmm. I've ventured in it a little bit myself, not really too successfully, but so it's just kind of my way to support and network with different businesses, and to spread the word, because I love podcasts. I dove headfirst into it, and the biggest factor was I couldn't find a podcast that I liked in the food space that was not New York, Chicago, or LA based. There was very little Alaskan based podcasts, so I was like, you know what, if I can't find what I like, I'm just gonna make it. and kind of dove headfirst through the podcast movement challenge, 28-day challenge, to get mine up and going. And it's grown so much. I thought maybe like five of my friends would listen to it once and call it good.
Uh-huh.
And it's grown in to the point now that I'm in the process of starting a second podcast.
So it's, yeah, well, before you tell us about the second podcast, I want to just say, you know, I'm thinking about this podcast and I'm thinking, you know, it's sort of sad that we're in a place where traveling isn't a thing. Alaska is one of those places I really want to visit in my lifetime. I absolutely do. But I'm thinking, how fun would this be to listen to if I had a trip planned to Alaska? Because these are the people that I probably am far more interested in visiting, right? These are the people I want to go see. I want to hear about because they're real, you know? So if you're traveling to Alaska, or thinking about it, this might be a great podcast to listen to just get a sense of the people and what they're doing and support the people who are doing their stuff up there, which is so cool.
Yeah. See, and I've noticed since, I was getting a lot of world, views all around the world. I call it a lot, other people want it, but for me, it's a lot. So, and I think that's what, before the travel restrictions really set in, I was starting to really build that kind of, I have a feeling without talking to anyone, but I have a feeling it was a lot of people coming up for vacations that were finding the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was just so exciting to know that they might have listened to one of these companies and businesses and wrote it down on their itinerary.
Right.
That probably, if they were just coming up to do the tourist thing, might not never know about them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly, because it's not, they probably, I'm guessing, are some of the smaller businesses who don't have a ton of a budget, so you're not putting your ad everywhere. You can't compete with some of the big stuff that's connected everywhere else, you know? So, yeah, no, I love that. I think that's awesome. I mean, I know when I get the opportunity to travel, I want to go do something different. I want to go do, what do you do if you live here? You know, I've taken a couple cruises in my life that I've loved and I'm so fortunate to have taken them. But it is one of those things where it's like, but you don't get a chance to do the local things. You don't, you know, you don't get to eat the food that they actually cook in Jamaica, you know, which is what I want, if possible. Or if you get to eat at a restaurant, it's kind of where you're allowed to go. And I mean, Alaska is a different place than some of these other places the cruise ships travel to, but.
Oh yeah. I mean, we have, like, when you head up to Denali National Park, there's a whole town. Well, it's not officially a town because it's unnamed, unincorporated, but pretty much there's a whole town, just outside the park that's only alive during the summer season for the tourist. And literally in August, it shuts down. There's one stoplight on the main highway going from Anchorage to Fairbanks when you go through this town. The locals call it Glitter Gulch because at night it looks like it's glittering during the summer when it's all lit up.
Sure.
But I mean, we have whole towns up here that just thrive off of the tourist industry. And a lot, of course, we have the big companies. We have Princess, Carnival, the big cruise ships and stuff, but there's still a lot of just down and dirty entrepreneurs up here that go and they're fighting for their share of the pie. And I'm just glad I give them a chance to maybe get a little bit more of it.
Do you want to talk about your other one as well?
Yes. So it is Clusterfuck without the U. It's going to be more of a freestyle, just kind of picking topics, getting different points of views on it. I have one episode up on it right now talking with the Dr. Nurse F show about the coronavirus, but it's going to take a couple weeks for it to come out, but it's going to be, I'm going to try to get topics that are maybe a little more in the gray area. Like one I've been doing is on feet fetishes. So, and I'm trying to get all different views on it just to kind of, I'm a kitchen rat. I have kind of a twisted sense of humor. So my 49th meal, I keep that one very business one. This is my one more to cut back and have fun on.
Talk about how the foot thing even came about. Okay. I think that's actually a really interesting understanding of why you went there.
Okay, so being in the kitchen industry, the restaurant industry, we all know everybody's laid off. And servers and cooks tend to live the rock star lifestyle, or we like to pretend we do, and we're not good at saving money. So a lot of the waitresses on some of my groups that I'm part of on Facebook were talking about selling feet pics to make extra money. And at first I thought it was a joke, like, haha, yeah, we're all hurting. But no, like, they're doing it. And some of them are hustling that money. And it's just kind of, being a podcaster, I was like, I got to hear the story. Like, I got to find out about this. Right. I mean, it's not my feet are, yeah, that whatever floats your boat, I ain't going to judge you. But it was just, and then it's kind of turned into a rabbit hole of like, now I'm talking to somebody that buys feet pics, somebody that had one of the first foot fetish sites on the internet. And it's kind of being that podcaster in me, I'm trying to get all these stories and mash it into one. And it's been hilariously entertaining to make this episode.
I bet.
But all the problem is, like, I'm setting the bar so high off of my first show that now, like, how do I top this?
Right. Well, and I know how much work can go into something like that, trying to put pieces together. You know,
yeah.
so that's a lot. So,
you know, with all the homeschooling, I think I'm going to be teaching the kid editing 101.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well,
I'll do the recording and let him come in and edit it.
No kidding. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's so, you know, in Duluth right now, I mean, everything, every single day, it's a different story. Everything's a different story. We're in Minnesota. We're starting to stay at home tomorrow night. That's the plan, is to stay home and only go out for necessities. And I live in St. Louis County with Duluth, and I just saw that the fifth person was confirmed diagnosed. So, you know, we're kind of in that space. And I think it's a good time to do this. I think it's a hard, I mean, how the heck do you make these choices? This is tough stuff.
I'm glad that's not me having to make that choice.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I would not want that ulcer producing situation ever. And I give them so much credit for stepping up and doing that. So it's exciting. It's exciting in a very strange and concerning kind of way, but I think we all just have to come together and just do this the best we can. And be it people who are making decisions or people who are just living their lives, trying to figure out what their next decision is. This is not easy. And I think the comfort is that we're all in it together. And I'm hoping that that is the thing that saves us and doesn't hurt us. I think there's a lot of possibility in that if we can do this right.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you're just getting into the volunteer quarantine, just get it out of the way now. Don't make them mandate it and ramp it up even more. It sucks. Life sucks half the time, though. So just kind of suck it up and just get it out and over with.
An optimist at heart, I can tell.
A realist.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate right now to be in a space that I've got decent space to be in. I can work out in my house. I can, you know, as best I can. I don't like have a gym or anything. I've got a decent amount of space in my living room and some speakers. That's, you know, and some Richard Simmons tapes. So I'm good.
Yeah.
What do we do with what we have, and how do we make the best of this? So,
and anybody that is getting stuck down, I'm sure you have a phone. Download the Anchor app and just start recording a podcast. You got nothing better to do for 2 weeks. Tell your story. Send it out there.
Right. Yeah. If nothing else, it's your own very interesting record right now.
Exactly. That's what I've been telling some people that I know, especially the very social butterflies like me. I'm like, just start recording. I'm like, just pop on your memo recorder and just like kind of record a journal of it. Then you can go on YouTube, make like cool, funny videos of it. Like, just keep yourself entertained and just stay inside and wash your damn hands.
Yeah.
Wash them hands and that face. Upper lip should not smell like your booty.
don't touch anything.
But yeah, thank you so much, Judy, for having me on. It's been a true pleasure.
Yes, you too. This has been fun. It's been fun chatting with you. Thank you so much.
You have a good one.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you are well and safe and feeling good and healthy. And if you're not, I hope that you are on the mend very, very soon. Be well. Take good care. Thank you so much for listening. And check out the podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com. If this is new to you, there are a bunch more episodes and topics you can check out. You're sharing this episode with somebody who might be interested, or the podcast in general, is really, really huge. It's a huge way that you can support the podcast, help people find more things to help themselves in this and other times of health concerns. So please do not underestimate the power of you sharing with others this podcast. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And of course, I always want to really appreciate the Patreon subscribers. For everyone sticking with me through this period of uncertainty, I value you and your support so much. So thank you. I appreciate it. In good health, may we all move past this quickly, and may us all be well. And may you continue to find the pieces that fit beautifully into your health and wellness puzzle. See you next time.